Shlavei Sulam, Volume 3, page 209. What is it? Oil is called good deeds in the work. The Zohar says, the wise, his eyes are in his head. He asks, and where a normal man's are, normal man's eyes are, maybe they're in his body or in his arm. But we learn that a person will not walk four paces bareheaded. Why? Because Shina is divinity, is on his head. And anyways, his eyes and his words are in his head. Meaning in the same line. And it stands on his head, which is divinity. And when his eyes are there, in his head, which is divinity, he'll know that the same light that lights on his head needs oil. Because the body of man is the weak. And the light is up in the weak. And King Solomon cried, an oil on your head will not be missing. Because the light in his head needs oil. And it is the good deeds. And about that, he says, the eyes, the wise, the eyes are in his head and nowhere else. You have to understand why, if the Creator wants to give the light of God to man. Man needs good deeds as the oil. Meaning, as much oil as there is in the week, to that extent, the candle lights. Meaning that we see in this world that the week cannot light, but according to the extent of oil, to the amount of oil there is in it. But what has that got to do with spirituality? Why is it that when good deeds are missing, God cannot give to man that the light will not cease from him? The light that the Creator gives to man is because of the purpose of creation, to bestow to his creatures. So why does he need for the lower ones to give him good deeds? In order to understand that, if he wants to give delight and pleasure to the creatures, what does he need the creatures to give him oil for? The answer is, in order for there to be perfection of his acts, there was the restriction and concealment that his providence will not be revealed, but only after the creatures correct their vessels from a will to receive for themselves, to be in equivalence of form, called the will to bestow. And by that, the shame will be corrected. That comes from oppositeness of form, from the bestower. It turns out that although there is no ceasing there's no stop of the bounty from the bestower. But as it says, I, the Lord, did not change. But the correction is that was done by the receiver called Malchut of Infinity. That correction is extended that as long as the low one cannot receive it all in order to bestow, the light stops from lighting downward. That is why, in order for the light to light on a man's head, he has to do good deeds, meaning deeds of bestowal. That will bring man to do everything in order to bestow, and then light will be able to shine permanently. Now we can interpret what it says, the wise, his eyes are in his head, that the wise, Prophet Sallam said, that he who wants to be wise is already called wise. Therefore, it means that he who wants to be wise should look in his head, meaning that he has to believe that divinity is on his head. And because of that, our sages said, you cannot walk four paces bareheaded. Which we clarify that man's head is called man's mind. And the mind cannot be revealed, exposed. Meaning that you have to cover it. You have to cover the mind as though there is no mind. And you have to go above it. That only above reason, above his mind, he can accept everything in order to bestow. That this way a person can attain the sensation that divinity is above his head, meaning above reason. And by that, he'll come to that feeling. As Baal Sulam says, that when a person feels that he is in ascent, he shouldn't say, now I don't have to believe that his providence is benevolent. Because now I feel that it's so. It turns out that again, he goes he into his own mind, and he immediately falls from his degree because he thus flaws his faith above reason, and he says that now I don't have to go above reason. And that is called that again he falls into self-love, over which there was a restriction and concealment. And the light was taken away from him, and he remained in the dark. And when he says, when his eyes are in his head, meaning when he looks at the kingdom of heaven in his head, which is not bareheaded, but it's covered, and he goes above reason, and that is called good deeds. And what is a good deed? Him covering his head and going above reason. It turns out that a man's body is weak, which should light in his head, that needs the light in his head. And the light shines as long as there is oil. And when there is no oil, there is no light in the weak. And oil is called good deeds, meaning as long as he adds oil, the candle light burns. And meaning as long as he covers his head, meaning his feeling, meaning that he doesn't accept that sense that now he feels the light within reason, there's something to count on. Meaning now he has something to base his kingdom of heaven on. It turns out that now he doesn't have any oil, meaning good deeds, called above reason. And for that reason the wick burns out because of there's not enough oil. And that is the interpretation that we ask, what is that oil is called good deeds? The answer is that good deeds are as oil in the wick. That when the oil runs out, the light stops. Just so when good deeds stop, the light burns out. And Baruch Salam says that when he comes to a state of ascent, meaning when he feels that it's good to work so that everything will be in order to bring contentment to his maker, he shouldn't say that now I have basis to build my kingdom of heaven on, because now I don't need to go above reason. But he should say, now I see that I have to go always above reason. And the evidence is that by me going above reason, the Lord brings me closer and loves me. How do I know that He loves me? Baruch Salam said about that, that there's a law, there's a rule. If a person loves God, he should know that that is because God loves him. As it says, the Lord is your shadow. That is why from now on I accept on myself to go only above reason. That this way I see that God brings me closer. It turns out that he doesn't take that ascent as a basis to go with his sensation. So now he wants to be a worshiper of God. But he takes that ascent as a proof that the path to God is a path above reason. And from now on he'll just try and go above reason. Always try and go above reason. Now we can understand what the Zohar says. When you eat from the bread of the earth, you'll make a contribution to the Lord. It was said about the sheaf of the waving. What is waving? Nufa. Is it because the Kohen, the priest, waved it up? It is waving. What has that to do with us? If he waves or if lets it down? Nufa, waving, as we said. Nu, pe. Nufa. Which are the letters of Nufa. And the secret is, give respect to your Lord. Because Pe is honor, meaning Malchut, called respect, honor, glory, that you have to give it to the Lord. Therefore we have to raise it upwards. Because there's no praise to a great king. But when Israel corrects that glory, which is Malchut, and give it to the King of Glory. And that is Nu Pe, give glory. And that is definitely a waving. Meaning, waving Malchut to Zalampin. Meaning, that the matter of Nufa, waving, implicit work. meaning that although it says that you have to lift the sheaf, as it says, the sheaf of the waving, but the Zohar asks, what does that teach us in the work? But that he says that we have to raise Malchut to the Lord. That Pe is called Malchut, and Pe is called glory. As it says, give glory to the Lord your God. We have to give that Pe, which is Malchut, to the Lord. We have to understand what it means that we have to give Malchut to the Lord. And also what it means that we'll give a mouth, Pe, to the Lord. But when we speak of observing Torah mitzvot, privately meaning, in order to reach by that attention with God, which is equivalent to form, meaning to give up his own benefit and to work, to do only that which benefits the Creator. That work is called divinity in the dirt or in exile. Meaning when a person works for himself in order to be rewarded for his work, then there is fuel for his work because he looks at the reward. Whereas when a person wants to work not in order to be rewarded, then the body asks, what is that work to you? What service mean you by this? Then, this work for him tastes like dirt. And although he observes Torah and mitzvot anyhow, and with great force, but he works with great labor, since the body does not enjoy it. And on the contrary, if a person says to the body, if you ask me what I need to observe Torah and mitzvot for, the person should say, since until now I was working for you, and now I've come to the recognition that you have to work for the Lord, and since I cannot fight, as you are stronger than me, that is why I want to observe Torah and mitzvot. And I believe our sages who said that the light in him reforms him, that through observing Torah and mitzvot, I'll be able to overcome you. That is why I'm asking you not to get in the way, because otherwise I cannot cancel you. And what does the body answer to that? There is a rule. He who comes to kill you, kill him first. Of course, the body, what it can do, it does. It brings him many bad thoughts, so much so that he cannot overcome him. Then a person sees that by himself, he cannot overcome him. And what should he do then? He has no other option but to believe in a sage who said, he who comes to purify is aided. Meaning that he should pray to God then, to give him help from above, to have the strength to defeat his own body. And what should man ask help for at that time? He cannot defeat his evil called will to receive for himself, because divinity is in the ground, is in the earth. Meaning, since there is a rule in nature that the small cancels before the great. That is why man not being able to work to benefit the Lord is because the king is not so important in his eyes, which is called divinity in the dirt. It turns out that he asks the Lord to raise divinity from the dirt, meaning that divinity, which is called kingdom of heaven, which is not valued but as dirt. As it says in the blessing for the food, the merciful, he'll raise the sukkah, the booth, the fallen booth of David. That the booth of David means the kingdom of heaven, which is in the dirt. And we ask God to raise it, meaning that we can see its importance, its greatness, and not as we seem that, as we think that it is in the dirt, in the ground. That is why we cannot cancel our evil. Whereas, if the glory of heaven were revealed, the body would cancel as a candle before a torch. And that is that we say in the prayer, and because of our prayers, because of our sins, we exiled from our land and were distanced from our soil. Meaning that because of the sins, called vessels of reception, we were distanced from our land. Land means, land in Hebrew, Adama, means comes from the word Adame, I'll resemble the Elyon, the higher one, meaning to resemble the higher one, that the lower one wants to desire to bestow as the higher one. And he was distanced from it because he wants to receive only for himself. That is why we ask God and say, our Father, our King, reveal the glory of your kingdom fast. Meaning that by the Lord revealing His glory, meaning that He'll raise divinity from the earth, and Malchut will have its glory, then we'll have the possibility to cancel our will to receive. But now rises the question, what do we need to ask God for to raise kingdom Malchut from the earth? Why does he himself not show the importance, the greatness of Malchut? But he made it so that we think it is in the dirt. The answer is that if it were revealed, we would not have been able to choose, but everything would fall into the vessel of reception, and there would be no way to exit the authority of the will to receive for himself. Whereas when there is concealment over the kingdom of heaven, and you have to accept it above reason, then man realizes that there is a prohibition to receive bounty in the vessels of reception. Therefore, man begins to work not in order to be rewarded, but because of the glory of the King. That is why he asks the Lord not to conceal himself from the lower ones, but to reveal his glory so that we have the strength to cancel ourselves and that we can work because of the glory of the King. Now we can understand the matter of Tnufa. As it says, Tnu Pe, meaning Tnu Pe. We have to interpret what is that the creatures have to give Pe to the Lord, which is Malchut. Meaning that the lower ones have to take upon themselves the kingdom of heaven, which is called that they have to raise Malchut, which is in the dirt, and say that it is not low and it is not in the dirt, but its place is in the sky, in the heavens. And that is called kingdom of heaven, which is called that it is raised from the dirt and put back in its place, its important place in the heavens. Then Malchut is called Pe. And he says, give glory to the Lord your God, because Pe is honor, glory, because there's no praise to the higher King. But when Israel corrects that glory, which is Malchut, and give it to the King of glory, meaning that all our work is that we should aim in every act we do to raise divinity from the dirt, meaning to raise Malchut, meaning the kingdom of heaven that we accept upon ourselves to be dignified, to be glorified, and we understand its glory, and that it is good to work for the glory of God and not for ourselves. But this is hard work because it is against nature. That's why this work brings us many ups and downs, until a person sometimes despairs and says that this work is not for him, and he wants to escape the campaign because he sees no progress in the work. And furthermore, he sees that he's gone backwards and not forward, meaning that he sees that now he's more sunk in self-love. Whereas before he began the work of the soul, he was not so materialized. It turns out that now he sees that he is more evil. Then really comes the question, what is the truth? Meaning, is all this effort that he put into this work of reaching the love of God, was that for nothing? For no use? But as our sages said, forever will a person regard himself half guilty and half innocent. He performed one mitzvah, he is happy, for he has acquitted himself. So now there's a question, now that he's acquitted himself, how can he now see himself as half guilty? He is now mostly innocent. But we have to say, according to what our sages said, that he who is greater than his friend, he is desire is greater than him, than his, and why is he given a greater evil desire? The answer is that each time a person subdues some evil and corrects it, makes it holy, he's given a greater portion of evil to correct it. It turns out that now, when he has subdued the former evil, he is given a new evil, a greater one. Meaning, according to the greatness of the good, he is given a portion of the evil. It turns out that he who is greater than his friend, his desire, evil desire, is greater than him, than his. It turns out that the good and the evil are in one weight. It turns out that the matter of the recognition of evil is not recognized, but according to how much a person has attained the good, to that extent he discovers the evil. It turns out that he wears just a little bit of good, he only has a little bit of evil, because otherwise he'd not be balanced and would not be able to choose, because the evil would be more than the good. That is why a person is not shown the evil in him, but according to the good that is in him. It turns out that a person is always in a state of half good, half bad. It turns out that through the descent and ascent, the evil slowly corrects. And a person should always remember and believe what a sage said: he who comes to purify is aided. But a person should give an awakening from below. Then he attains a holy mouth. As it says, Nupe, give glory to the Lord your God. Time and again, both emphasizes that the more a person progresses in spirituality, the concealment grows more and more. As we know from the story of the exile of Egypt, Israel aside from the work, and then they faced Pharaoh, and then the 10 blows until they exit. All these things tell us that the obstacles grow, the concealment grows, and it takes a lot of patience to see these things as the correct results of labor, which is against the natural way. Our will to receive understands that the more he pays, the more he receives. And here, because we have to exit the will to receive, the more we pay with labor, we see that we have less in the will to receive. So we have to see the will to receive as emptier and emptier. So we can, only our mind can somehow maybe explain it and justify it. This path, this spiritual development in man, which is not as we're used to see in this world. The more a person gets closer to spirituality, he sees himself farther from it. The more effort he puts in it, he sees himself losing more. That's why there's no energy. Not naturally. So how can I work and at its end be beaten? What mind and heart would it work like that? If at the end of it I'm being punished, man is left with nothing and he's helpless and he doesn't know what to do. Maybe it's true according to what he hears, what he reads. He can somehow agree with that process in his mind, that maybe this is how it works on the way to exit, the will to receive and attain second nature. So what do we do? It's very nice that it's written like that, but is it feasible? this whole thing. A person in the will to receive doesn't have any other strength than this. So what is he going to do? He really has nothing to do but take the greatness, recognition of the greatness of the Lord from the group, because by nature he doesn't have it. And when he receives the recognition of the greatness of the Creator, to hear how everything depends on the Lord, and that he's able, he can do it. Everything that around a person should aim at that. His rabbi, his books, his friends. Here it takes a direct plea to the Creator. But a person cannot do it by himself. He must find the force for that, the strength to do it in his friends, in the books. And then he turns to the Creator correctly when he sees that he himself is hopeless. He'll not be able to do anything. And he's done everything he possibly could, and he sees that it's impossible that something will come out of it. And he puts himself throws himself into the hands of the Creator to do as he pleases, until he finds exactly what he wants, and then he crosses the barrier. All the choice that we have to make is to shorten the path, the time of darkness, of exile. Each time we make progress, we see ourselves as emptier. Our Bow of Rights said, during the exile in Egypt, a person can grasp something in his vessel, but the vessel is broken, so whatever he takes in leaks out. So he is nothing of all his labor, until he has no strength to do anything with this vessel, but to ask that the Creator corrects the vessel, then his labor will be in a corrected vessel. How do you fill up the holes? How do you mend the holes with a screen in order to be stopped? That's the only way to fill in all the holes. You see that I've been speaking about it for maybe 25 years. I've been speaking about it for 20. And each time there's a novelty about it. Because you are different each time. You're new. There are new distinctions. And out of that, you speak. Otherwise, you can say everything in one line and just forget about it. How is an inner distinction performed? Follow your own mind, and we'll see can such a process be built? You're saying that you're reading the same thing, and now you're saying that it's saying it's different. What is it that you have to tell apart? Why? In order to reach spirituality. Now let's learn how to cross the barrier. So how do we do it? When do we cross the barrier? On what condition do I cross the barrier? What do I need in order to cross it? Is it through prayer? Through despair? The Creator does it. So let's start from the end. So the Creator gives me some strength. What does he do? Does he take me by the hand? In my desire, in my will, he gives me strength. That there's such a change in my desire that I begin to feel spirituality, I begin to live there. To live there means to live with an intent to bestow, to some extent. He gives me a screen that is called across the barrier. Before I didn't have it, and now I do have it. I do have a minimal aim to bestow. So will to receive with that, then aim to bestow. That is called my first spiritual vessel. So I have to receive a screen from him. What is the degree before that? Maybe a need for a screen. You can receive something only if you have a vessel for it, a need for it. What need for a screen should there be? Can there be in me? Can I imagine a situation where I need a screen? Can such a thing be? So I go backwards a little more. In order to have a need for a screen, I have to know that I'll gain something from that screen. What do I gain by it? I gain what I get through it. What do I get? That I bestow. I see that I bestow upon him. And it's not that this is my fuel, my bestowal to him. Because then I'm working not cleanly in order to bestow. A clean work is that I work even when I don't feel him. I only have one knowledge, that I bestow. In the end, I come to a situation where I need some abstract force, that now it is completely absent. Can it be that I'll have a desire for it? That is the question. If I examine what is a desire for a screen, then I'll discover that I don't have a desire for a screen. And maybe I don't want the screen itself and what it will give me in the spiritual world, pure bestowal, regardless of myself. You can't think these things. They're completely detached from reality. It's not true prayer from the bottom of the heart. So So it must be that I can't reach it, but at least I can reach the despairs around it. So let's do this. What things in the will to receive can I find in me, clarified already, that if I did them, I finished them, it is the most that I can do before the barrier. As we learn before the end of correction, that except for the heart of stone, everything is already clarified. Everything but the heart of stone. It's like when you have a stone, a bone, and meat over it, and you eat everything but the bone. And by that, you examine what you can and what you can't eat. So just as before the end of correction, we don't touch the heart of stone. The same work we have to do here, that we have to be ready here to do the same work. So what distinctions here should be, which we should have here, so that afterwards we'll receive from above, so that we receive light from above to pull us from this world to spirituality. What conditions do you need to bring you to that last distinction? It takes years of effort. It's as though you study over and over again the same articles and essays, same material. These essays came out first in 84. Before that, nothing. All we studied was Talmud and Sefirot. So us chewing these things is a great, it works for a very efficient distinction. We have to, as much as we can, put it into our hearts, to read it in such a way that it'll touch our bare desires. Like Rabbah says, that you're given a medicine, but you didn't understand the doctor. Instead of putting a teaspoon in your mouth, you put it on your legs. So that's the result you get out of it. When you read it, when you hear it, you should try to be connected with it. To imagine it happening within you. And then, little by little, it penetrates. The light shakes the vessel, corrects it. All we have to do is to make that light do it. These are states, the descents and the ascents. The light and the vessels reveal intermittently. And there's nothing more than that. the question behind all these is, should we be that smart that we have to know in detail all the process that we go through? And if I don't know what I'm going through, would that mean that I will not cross the barrier? That's the question. Is my knowledge of it makes us cross the barrier, and lack of it stops us from crossing it? The answer is no, not at all. If there's a bright person, in a few lessons, he'll learn the process, and he, in a few lessons, he can grasp the whole process and lecture about it. And another person cannot understand these explanations. Inside, he's so crude and underdeveloped mentally that he can't grasp these things. He doesn't feel them, but it doesn't matter. You can have two of those. One is like Shimon from the market, not Rabbi Shimon, but Shimon from the market, and the other is so delicate, gentle, and smart, bright. They can both sit at the table, but there is no connection with how they progress, because it all depends on the effort. If the person who is dense, who is not smart, if he puts in a lot of effort, and the other guy who is brighter doesn't make an effort, if he's too bright, he doesn't see where to put himself, where to make an effort, because he grasps everything. But the fact of the matter is that everything goes by the effort, and that poor bright person who was not given enough thickness, so Kabbalah is needed in a materialized generation. We need it, not our ancestors. They felt godliness out of life. It was clear to them that it was like that. It was easy for them. To observe mitzvot with the connection to the Lord. Because they were fine, they felt the correct feelings. They didn't need Kabbalah. They didn't need to make an effort. They were too fine. Only at the end, now, the last vessels, the thickest vessels, the greatest concealment. If they were making the efforts that we do, it was impossible to make those efforts with their vessels. everyone felt that they were capitalists in those days. The generation of Moses, until King David, the first temple. From the first temple and on, there really begins to be a descent. But still, there were prophets. Everything was alive. Godliness was understood to the people by sensation. They didn't need books. They could feel it. When they came out to exile, they began to write. Because there was still connection between those who were in exile and those who were with revealed godliness. But before that, they didn't need any books. So you have to write what you feel. And everyone feels it, understands it, if everyone knows about it, why write about it? As Bala Sulam writes that in the beginning of the breaking of the Iron Wall, since the ruin of the temple, there's an iron wall between us and the revelation of godliness. There was such a wall that we can't feel anything. And that is the source of all our troubles. If we want to live well, godliness should be revealed. You feel the evil until you discover the Creator in your vessels. There is no other condition. He writes in Shamati that the reason for feeling good is the sensation of the Creator, and for feeling bad is the lack of it. That's what pulls us towards the Creator, that we want to feel good. Below the barrier, we cannot aim for the good that is above the barrier. It's impossible. That's why the exit from Egypt is in haste, in the darkness, stealing the vessels. It can't be any other way. Jumping from the sea. Apart from patience, I don't know what else can help. If a person asks the Creator for something and asks it a certain way, it's a sign that he's making conditions to the Creator. And you will help me this and that way. I don't know even if you know how, what to ask. If you ask something good for progress, if you don't know, if you know where it is, then certainly you receive an answer for that. If you ask something that is not so correct, so you ask for a reply that is not what you expect. That it promotes you, but it's not what you think you should get. So the right prayer is without any conditions. That I want whatever you think is right for me. And I, in advance, will accept it as progress. But if you have such a desire already, then what can you ask for already? If it doesn't matter what you receive, When you ask the Creator, do you ask for the light of Absagas? I don't know how you can ask for it. The vessel asks for it because the vessel is in the spiritual world. And then there, a prayer is something that is very specific. How do you know what you feel above the barrier? You cannot be connected with the truth below the barrier. But after the barrier, above it, you have some attention with the Creator. And then according to that, you examine the vessel. You know where you are. You know what the posterior of the higher one is. What actions it can do on you. You progress attentively with awareness. You have a mind. You have your spiritual degree, which is your mind, the measure of the revelation of the Creator in your soul, and you go above it. But you have some grip of lights, of vessels. Above reason, then, it does not mean that you don't have reason. Only here it's like that, because we don't know anything of our situation. In our situation, except for the time of the study, or when we do good deeds, what are the good deeds? And the Torah is the study, and when you study you awaken the surrounding lights, and the good deeds that you do, all sorts of actions that bring you to the surrounding lights. Things that have to do with society, with a group, all these things that awaken surrounding lights, because you are working to connect with other souls in order to progress to the Creator. So you're actually making the choice. And the Torah is when you study. Any means that was given to us by our sages are the study and the social work that we do. If you ask which is more important, the social work is more important than the study. Because they give you a desire for the study, they make you come to the study with the right intent. They give you a reason to sit here and read. If you just sit here like that without it, it can even make you feel bad. The demand comes from the actions around the study. So the social work is the most important. We learn that any person who prays receives according to his desire. So even if you don't study, but only do things that are in the study, in circulation, in society, if you get the right desire to the Creator, it'll be enough for you to get a response. You can't say that this alone, but the weight of the preparation is very heavy. If a person asks of the Creator to feel good. And that person is not in intention with the Creator. His desires are not corrected yet. So his good and the true good are opposite to one another. How can I then ask for something good? You can ask differently. Now I'm in a certain situation. Each second that I'm in a situation, I ask for something. I pray for something. I turn to the Creator. Why? My body, each cell, each system, each organ, the psychological systems, hormones, whatever, everything is working. There's a desire in every cell and in every body, a desire that sustains life. And these desires always turn to the Creator, even before I became so smart and thought I was in control of them. Even before I aim them, they turn to the Creator. By me now, using my brain, I read and heard that it's best that I ask for something else what my body wants. Can I change my body like that? Will my cells, work differently? Will my thought work differently? Even if I read something in a book, it won't make a difference. Artificial things, when I read them or hear them, that it's good to bestow. These things are outside of me. They're external. I can't control my desire. When I read something and learn about it, I only put them into my mind. It doesn't relate to my desire. It is a direct result of the lights that construct it. As we learn that the light builds desire, and then when it enters the desire, it causes all the process that the desire wants to go through. The vessel doesn't have any control. I can maybe influence my desire if I bestow to the Creator, and then according to my plea, the Creator sends some light that maybe the Creator will build some light according to what I ask. But it all goes through the Creator. I myself cannot control anything. Everything is through Him. Only through Him can I make something change. So what has that got to do with how much I read in a book or do not read? It doesn't bring any internal change. These things are completely external, artificial. There's nothing, it can change nothing. It's a matter of tasting the surrounding light through the study, through the circulation, through the group. And that attracts the surrounding light, and the light changes me, but it's not like I can directly change something in me. I cannot touch myself. I don't have access to my will to receive. If you take the greatest surgeons, they might reach from your eye to the eye nerve, and maybe systems in your body that develop in your brain that analyze what you see and correct it. There are many complicated systems there. But then the result is brought to the pleasure center in the brain. If you begin to examine that center, it is also a body in the brain that acts on biochemical reactions. But beyond that, where you can't reach with a blade, with a razor, beyond it, there's a part in us that feels, which is a spiritual vessel. No one can reach there. That vessel is spiritual. It is a desire. The rest are the dresses over the desire in the matter, in substance. They're expressions of the desire. But they're only passages. But the desire itself, we can't attain. We can't grasp. What enters my eye? What enters it is a spark of the light. Say I look at a beautiful picture. I get pleasure from it. Meaning what? There's no pleasure in the picture itself. In the picture, there's a spark of the light which is corrupted against my vessel. Someone else would look at it and it would be disgusting in his eyes. And to me, it gives great pleasure. So in that picture, there's a spark, which is a spiritual spark, dressed in the picture. Through the picture, it reaches my eye, goes through all the systems, until that spark finally is released and enters the spiritual pleasure center, desire. And all the processes in between, the picture in my eye, the nerves, they're all passages. The sense of sight, with everything in my mind, is only a passage. That's how we work in this world. The same lights and vessels, but there's a passage in between. Now we can see that we cannot control the lights or their vessels. It is detached from our body. It's not even in our body. We can only change them by attracting over ourselves light that changes them. That is the surrounding light. You're saying, I don't know what's good for me, what's not good for me, how will I ask for something? The Creator doesn't care about what you ask. It's like a baby. That the father is going with walking in the street with his baby, and his baby's crying, and the father doesn't even look at him. Everyone says, why don't you pay attention to him? He says to the people, the baby is crying because he wants a pin to scratch his eye with. It's an example, because the baby is asking for something that will harm him. He thinks it's for him, it's good for him, but he doesn't know that it's bad for him. So do you give him or do you not give him that pin? Let him cry. Why doesn't the father calm him down? Through the crying, the baby will understand that his desire, will, is not like the father's. And probably the father knows best. So maybe I should stop crying and work on my desire to equalize it with the Creator. The father wants to buy him a book. He doesn't want a book, he wants a ball. So he cries, and the father doesn't say anything. But he bought the book and just holds it. The child will eventually learn that his next situation can only be a book, until he finally comes to a situation where he wants the book. He'll see that a desire for the bowl gives him tears. He'll hate the book in the meantime, and the father too, and look for another father to give him a ball, and see that nothing helps, until he wants both the father and the book. But he'll receive it only when he asks for the book, because if he receives it otherwise, he'll just tear it apart. The father waits until he wants that book, and then he'll get it. See what process he has to go through from the first initial desire to the ball until he wants that book that much. That's what we're searching for, how to reach people now. That apart for television and sex and food, maybe having fun, they want nothing. How can you give him our books that are so difficult to have them interested in it? To make humanity want Kabbalah, want the book instead of the bowl. Just now we had the Mondial, the Soccer World Cup. 2 billion people watched it. If 2 billion people were interested in Kabbalah, the world would turn over. People turn to soccer over such great problems. People in Brazil have nothing to eat. What is the difference between turning to the Creator and turning to the souls? When a person understands that the desire of the Creator is to bestow upon the creature, and that bestowal in the creature, or when a person understands that he should reach the love of God, equivalence of form, adhesion, and that thing cannot be if he does not prepare the vessel, which is the connection with other souls. Before that, he does nothing. We have to understand that we can act in spirituality only to the extent that we are connected in this world. As simple as that. Say there's before you something heavy, and you have to move it. And you see that by yourself, it's possible. So you ask for another person, another person, another person, until you can move it. So imagine that you're below in this world, and in order to reach the 125th degree of the end of correction, you have to move something heavy, very heavy, that each time gets heavier. So the higher you want to climb these steps, you have to connect with more and more souls to help you push it up. Until you connect with all souls, otherwise you cannot reach it. To get to the first step, it's enough that you cancel your ego. Maybe that you connect yourself with 10 souls. Second degree was 100. Third was 1,000. That's That's an example we can understand. Souls are people around me who need what I need and can help me out. And they want to push it themselves. That's what I need people for. But again, turn into the society, to the group, is only when I know the goal, why I'm doing it, the reason. Then it'll be the correct demand of the creator, of the group. Otherwise, I'll just be building a communal society, but it'll be an egoistic one. The whole work should be, when I first think of the aim, the final target, and out of that I begin to work to connect with others. If I just want to bond with others, with this person because he's smart, with that person because he's strong, and that person is calm or something, if these are the reasons that I connect with people, I'll never connect with a group that will help me push that load up. I have to choose people who want the same thing as I do, spirituality. See how many groups we have here. We have 13 groups. We have people who don't have any groups, who are not in any group. And maybe each group thinks differently of the goal. I don't know by what criteria they were formed.